Number four, which is the HBA rules, and this is a briefing. We have Randy Thurston with us. Welcome.
Thank you. I think I've had the pleasure to meet most of you, but for those of you that don't know me, I'm Randy Thurston. I'm the Protection Division Manager. My division is made up of the oil spill team, the forest habitat section, and the regulatory services section. And the hydraulic code rules are part of the work that we're doing in the regulatory services section. Oops. Must be a better way to do this. Well, catch Carol. So why are we updating these rules? Most of the rules haven't been updated since 1994, with the exception of the golden fish rules, and a lot has changed since 1994. I know I didn't need to wear these glasses in 1994, so things have changed. We've had changes to our statute. We've had 15 new sections added to the RCW that covers the hydraulic project approval program since 1994. We've also had some procedural and administrative changes. We have a new HPA type that was added, so we now went from 5 to 6. We have a new online application system that we're really excited about. So that changes how our applicants will interact with the agency when they apply for HPAs. We also have implemented some simpler permitting for certain types of low-risk projects, and that will become part of our rules. In addition to the procedural and administrative requirements and the statute, we've also had changes in our science and technology since 1994. Unfortunately, the listing of the salmonid has spawned a lot of research. And so there's a lot of new information about where these fish are, the habitats that they use, and how to best protect them. And that is captured in these white papers. So today I just want to give you a little bit of background about what we've done so far and what we're going to do and the timeline for that. And then I also want to give you a brief just an overview of the HPA program and kind of our little bit about what the law is and what it does. And then our plan to brief you through the over a period of months. There's several sections in the rules, and we're looking at briefing you on 20 of those sections that are either new or have significant changes. So we're wanting to do that over a period of time so we don't inundate you with a lot of information at once. And then propose changes to two of the sections today. Let's see. So first, for the background, we actually began this process in 2006, and I am really excited to be here today because this is a milestone for us. We started this as in preparation for getting a habitat conservation plan from the services so that the HPA program would have protection from under ESA. And although we abandoned that, we kept working on the rules because they were so outdated that they really needed to be updated. We had a series of stakeholder meetings, and then we've also met with a lot of individual stakeholders. And we realize that these rules are very polarizing. We're going to get a lot of comments, on both sides, whether they're too restrictive or not restrictive enough. We're really doing our due diligence to get out there and meet with people before we actually file the CR-102 to get a good handle on what those issues are and to try to address as many of them as we can before we get to that point. So we've had 4 draft versions of the rules. Each draft version has had opportunity for stakeholder comment from the stakeholder group, as well as other interested individuals, and we posted it on our website, so we have got some public comment also. In addition, we have just published the draft programmatic EIS for the rules, and that went out this past Monday. So it's out for a 45-day comment period, along with the version 4 of the rules. And we've set up 7 public meetings around the state that we're going to have. Again, this is all in preparation for the CR 102. This is kind of above and beyond just to get a lot of public involvement and input into what we're doing. Oh, Eros, thank you. It's a good boss, takes care of you. So this is the timeline that we're looking at. We did EIS scoping in the summer of 2012 and got comments on the EIS. We worked on the rule development, drafting various versions of the rules for comment, and then we just finished our draft programmatic EIS, and that is out. So our plan is to brief you on various sections of the rules through probably March or April, and then we will publish a final programmatic EIS, final version of the rules, final SBIS when we go to CR 102 and request you to adopt them. So just a little overview on the HPA program. This is the authority, this is the statute that gives us our authority, and it's construction projects in state waters. It was actually established in 1943, so it's been around a while. And although the statute has been amended over time, we've maintained our basic authority to protect fish life. Then the chapter of the hydraulic code rules in WAC is what we're proposing to update now. So this is kind of the basis for HPAs. Basically says in the event that any person or government agency wants to undertake a hydraulic project, they have to get a permit from us before commencing work. And they have to get that, and that permit is issued for the protection of fish life. That's paraphrasing here. I wasn't going to read the whole thing to you. But so, hydraulic project is work that will use, divert, obstruct, or change the better flow of state waters. The purpose is only for the protection of fish life. We can't protect marine birds or marine mammals. We get asked that a lot under the hydraulic code. So fish life in the case of the statute is shellfish, game fish, food fish, and other non-classified fish species. So if it has a fin, it's covered under the hydraulic code, or if it's a shellfish. So not all hydraulic projects require an HPA. The statute does exempt some project types from the HPA process, and these are some of those project types that are exempt. So crossing established fords, removal of derelict gear, spartina control, and private sector aquaculture. We can issue HPAs for the infrastructure that supports aquaculture if you need a dock to tie your boat to, but we don't issue HPAs for the actual facilities need to culture these species. So as I said, there's 6 types of HPAs. I don't know why people think regulations are complicated, but we have a chronic danger HPA, which was the new HPA type that was added by the legislature a couple of years ago. This allows the county legislative authorities to request an HPA for up to 5 years if they have properties that have been damaged by flooding or erosion for 2 consecutive years and they need to protect those. Imminent danger is a permit that can be the imminent danger can either be declared by the county legislative authority or the department, and they're issued for in situations where damage to people, property, or the environment is likely to occur within the next 60 days. So there's an expedited process for issuing those permits. And then we have expedited HPA. So and this is at the department's discretion, if there's cases where it would be a significant hardship for a person to go through the normal process, or that there's a risk of damage to their people, property, or the environment, if they have to go through that process, then we do have the ability to fast-track that permit. Emergencies are when we have an immediate threat, and they're usually issued verbally. Sometimes we'll have to wait for the emergency situation to clear up, and if we have opportunity, say the water has to drop before they can do the work, then we can issue a written. We don't always have to issue a verbal. And then we have two pamphlets, Golden Fish and Aquatic Fish and Plants, and it just requires the person using the pamphlet to follow the rules. And basically the standard is everything else. Okay. So one of the questions that you'll probably get some feedback on our jurisdiction. This slide is meant to address that, but we do. There is a misconception that our jurisdiction is limited to at or below the ordinary high water line. It isn't. A hydraulic project definition is anything that will use divert or obstruct or change the natural flow or bed, and there are activities that occur above the ordinary high water line that do that. And then there's also the definition of bed. So things like dikes and levees, that are constructed to manage flow, those may occur above the ordinary high water line, for example, but those would be a hydraulic project. So there are limits to the conditions that we can put on an HPA. We have to be reasonable. We have to put conditions on that provide for the proper protection of fish life, but we can't impose conditions or attempt to optimize those conditions for fish life, and we can't put conditions on that are out of proportion to the impact. So as a biologist, a new biologist, I always tell them that basically you have to be reasonable and you have to be able to defend what you put on your permit. And picture yourself in front of the Pollution Control Hearings Board having to defend that decision. And that should answer your question on whether or not that should be a provision that should go on the permit. So, we can deny permits. We don't do it very often. If we are unable to mitigate the impacts in a permit, then we do have to deny them. We give a denial in writing. And we cannot unreasonably withhold or unreasonably condition an HPA. So, and there are projects that we can't deny. So if the governor or county legislature declares an emergency and a project falls within that emergency, we can't deny an HPA for that. Same if the county declares an imminent danger situation or a chronic danger. We can condition those, though. We just can't deny them. So that's kind of a little overview on the hydraulic code. It's real short, but be glad to answer any questions if you have them later. So I want to switch now to the proposed changes in the rules. So we want to make the rules easier to read, easier to understand. So we have a new layout in the rules, and it starts with a description of the project type or activity that's covered in that rule. It also has a section for fish life concerns, because we think it's important for the person who was reading the rules to understand why they're being asked to do what they're being asked to do in the rules. So if you can read the fish life concerns and see what and make the link between how the rules protect, address those concerns, I think it goes a long ways towards clarity. And then we've also split the rules by design requirements and construction requirements, just to make it clear which is which. We've added 13 new sections, and we've revised seven sections, and to the point where they do have significant changes. So those are the 20 projects that I'll be talking to you about as coming forward. So this is kind of my plan to brief you, and you can let me know if it'll work for you. I would like to cover three or four sections per meeting. We'd tentatively like to request adoption in June. For each section, prepare briefing material for you, similar to what I gave you today, with the section title, the background, a summary of the changes, or the summary of the new section if it's a new section. Kind of the public comments, what are the themes I'm hearing both in favor or in opposition to the rule. And then I'll give you a copy of what the proposed rule language is and what the existing rule language is. So the first one, section I want to cover today, I've picked two that are fairly, that we've made significant changes to, but they're not very controversial to start with today. So the first one I'd like to talk to you about is procedures, our procedures chapter. Currently, we don't have rules to cover all six types of HPAs, so we do in our new rules. We also have special types of standard HPAs that we've covered in our new rules and procedures. So, fish habitat enhancement projects, general HPAs, which is the HPAs we usually are issued to state and county governments for infrastructure maintenance and repair. And these are for routine projects that are done often and are fairly low risk and don't need individual plans or site-specific provisions. And then multi-site, so that we allow applicants to apply for more than one site on an HPA. And then we have our simple HPAs for our low-risk projects, and we've shorten the application. One of the things that we're doing in our new electronic system is, I don't know if you're familiar with the application that people use now. It's called a JARPA, a Joint Aquatic Resources Permit application form. And it's gone to the point where it's about 13 pages long now. And so in our new online system, our standard permit application will be about 3 pages. HPA application is less than that. So we really shorten the questions down to what we really need to know in order to make a determination of how to protect fish life. So all of this is covered in procedures as well as how to apply, how the department will process the HPAs. And hopefully it's organized in a way that's easy for the applicant to understand. The other section I'd like to talk to you about today is currently penalties, but we're changing the name to compliance. Historically, the department has always relied on criminal enforcement of our hydraulic code rules. We've never implemented civil enforcement, although we have had the ability to do that. So we do want to implement our civil authority. We've got in the rules basically a stepwise process to do that. So a person first would be asked to voluntarily correct the non-compliant condition, and then there would be a notice of correction, and then finally there would be a civil penalty if that was warranted. Still a lot of work to actually get that program on the ground, but this is the first step to doing that. And then our criminal enforcement is still an option. We've just recently rewrote our policy for enforcement of the hydraulic code. Enforcement officers are going to take the lead for non-permitted projects where people are doing work without an HPA. And then we're going to be responsible for doing compliance on permitted projects, the habitat program, our biologist. So for the November meeting, I'm going to talk about three sections, new sections, mitigation requirements for hydraulic projects, And I'll explain what that is in November, unless you want to. And then authorized work times in freshwater. We've never had that actually in rule. And then freshwater habitats of special concern, which include our priority fish, some of our priority fish habitats. So I'll cover that in the November meeting. And with that, I'll take questions. I know I didn't take my whole hour, so I hope you're not disappointed.
Yeah, we're grateful. It was a great presentation.
Very nice.
Succinct. Commissioner Smitten?
Hopefully I can call you Randy.
You sure can.
Good. Perhaps significant enough changes that warrant not showing the old language to the new language. Often it's easy to track that way.
Yeah.
I was guessing that maybe you're just so comprehensive in changes that you didn't do that.
Yeah, we looked at doing that, but you're right. There are so many changes that when we actually do the CR-102, it'll be total. The existing language will be totally struck out, and the new language will replace it. I know it causes some issues for people that want to crosswalk between what is current and what are the changes. In a version two of the rules, I actually used the comments section and actually put in there if it was new language or where the existing language was for the Association of Washington Businesses had requested that. It took me about a week to do that, but it is time-consuming to do that, but if we get enough input from constituents that they think that's important, then I would definitely entertain doing that again. It kind of compresses the language down, and you have a comment field, but we could definitely do that.
Mm-hmm. Your work is really commendable, especially to attempt to make it more user-friendly, and look forward to seeing the later products.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, we're really excited. It's long overdue. Well.
Commissioner Holtzmiller?
In my line of work, we use HBAs on a pretty regular basis, and that was when you said you were going to add 13 new. I'm going, oh, my Lord. It never seemed to come off. It just get added into it. And it sounds as though you are going to, this is replacing some other.
Yeah, there actually be more sections in the actual rule,
but it
shouldn't change how your HPA looks because we're only going to pull out the appropriate ones. It really is filling in gaps where we didn't have the information before, and where we were actually requiring things of applicants, but it wasn't really. For example, the timing provisions, we've always put freshwater timing provisions in our permits, but it's not in rule.
So. Well, and that's, I just hope that you remember to keep them simple as you can so it don't get into, because there's times it just gets easier to beg for forgiveness and for permission, and that isn't a desirable deal.
Yeah, I agree. And so what's in rule will be form the basis of what goes into the HPAs. Fortunately got a staff person back who is great at plain talk writing and hopefully can help us rewrite some of these rules so that they are clearer, not so much jargon.
To a certain extent, we are just implementing what the legislature has worked out. There's been a lot of legislative attention to the HPA rules in the past several years. So a lot of this is not initiated by the
department. Well, there again, to this point, we've had really good luck with them on road repairs that they've been really good to work with because, there again, the road's washing out. They need to fix it, but yeah.
Because we've got constituents on all sides of this issue, users, conservationists, so... Thanks.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Oh, Commissioner Kehoe?
Yes, I just a general question. I take it then that you're not contemplating any real substantive changes to the rules. This is just going to be more of a redrafting, make it more user-friendly, or are you contemplating some serious you know, substantive changes.
There are some substantive changes to about seven of the chapters, and so that's one of the reasons for bringing those forward to you. I think probably one of the most controversial is the changes to the water crossing section, which includes bridges and culverts. Basically, we've taken one of our standard designs that we used to approve called a hydraulic design and moved it to a chapter called Fishways and put in stream simulation culverts. And I don't know if you know, but it's a different design. And there has been we've gotten quite a bit of comment on both sides on that chapter. So
okay, so it's not, there's two things going on, some substantive
yes.
changes and also just kind of making more user-friendly and yeah. getting rid of outdated provisions.
That's correct.
Okay.
I'm going to be very interested in this, following this. This has been contentious in the past. I'm also interested in how we're now going to be utilizing Habitat program staff to deal with the enforcement or compliance issues. So can you give us a little more sense of how that's going to work?
Yeah, and it really hasn't been determined.
Okay.
Getting the rules in place really just give us the ability. And then there is a lot that would have to go into a program like that. And we really haven't gotten there yet. I think we've been so focused on the rules, and we know this is out there that we need to address this. So we will be working on that, and I'm sure Lisa will be keeping you updated on as we move forward. But this really is just giving us the framework to do that. We know that there are a lot of situations where it doesn't make sense for a criminal. You know, somebody didn't put in your silt fence. It's, you know, please put in your silt fence. It's not, there's the enforcement officer, and
And as I recall, there's some new constitutional requirements if you do take the criminal law approach that might also be part of the consideration.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We
jury trial.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Requirement now.
The criminal stuff, we really rely on the enforcement officers to know that side of it. If we see something that we think that enforcement needs to be aware of to take action, then it's just turned over to them. So.
Okay. Director Anderson, did you want to say something?
Oh, I was just, listening to the conversation about substantive versus cleanup and making it more contemporary. I mean, just the one, this one about criminal versus civil and using our civil authority and outlining how we would do that, I think is a big, policy, I think a key policy shift. Mm-hmm. And I think it gives us some options to deal with violations that are measured. So if you, like Randy said, if there's some small part of the permit conditions that you didn't do or maybe you did it but didn't do it quite right, you can address those without, having to choose between some sort of a criminal offense or not doing anything at all. So mm-hmm. I think this is going to give us a lot more flexibility and to be have a more measured response when we have concerns.
Mm-hmm. Commissioner Holtzmiller?
Now, you said you're going to be dealing with culverts and bridges later on.
Well, I'll be covering that, yes.
When?
I'll have to look at the schedule.
Okay.
Let's see, water crossing section. So it'd be in February.
Okay. Now, are you seeking some input from road departments and that?
We sure are. They're members of our stakeholder group, and actually I'm meeting with the county engineers next week. Both the counties, WSDOT in particular, have been very good about providing comments on the last drafts of the rules. So.
Any other questions, comments? Okay, we will be seeing, Director Anderson.
Randy, this has been in process for a long time. I mean, you laid out the schedule, you had the scoping, and I know there's been a number of iterations as you've gone along, and have you've heard from stakeholders, concerns that they may have brought forward with previous drafts. Can you just give the commission a sense of, I mean, this isn't the first, this isn't the first version. This is a version that's been refined by a process up to this point in time prior to bringing it to them and starting to move through the public process associated with the rule adoption. Is that a fair?
That is fair. We every time we published a version, and we're on number four now, it was sent out to the stakeholders and their representatives from both the regulated and conservation community. And we got a lot of comments back, usually between 1,500 and 2,000 for each version that I sent out. So as we've gotten the comments back, you know, we've looked at those. We've incorporated a lot of them where we could. We still have our mandate to protect fish life. So we did it. You know, we considered those when we were looking at the comments. We met with people to, if they had significant issues that we couldn't address, met with them to explain why we were making the decision we were making in the rules. So individually, we've met with the tribes, Northwest Indian Fisheries Commission and the tribes. We've met with counties, cities, WashDOT,
forestry.
Yes, we had a lot of conversations with the forest industry. This has been a long process, but intentionally so, because we know it's contentious, and we wanted to be careful in our approach and try to address, like I said, as many issues as we could before we went to the CR 102.
And what has been the role of, the tribes, the co-managers? Have they consulted or?
They have provided comments to us. They are concerned about the water crossing section in particular, given recent events. They are also concerned about some of the simplified application processes that we want to put in place, because when we do that, of course, we don't review those on an individual basis, one by one. So they're concerned about them not getting enough attention from the agency. Part of that issue we've dealt with, because they realize the simple application is just a kind of standard application, and currently the tribes have the ability to view all of the applications that are submitted to us. There's a viewer for that, and so they still have an opportunity to comment to the agency if they see concerns that they don't think are. That they have about a particular project that's submitted to us. Now, once we go to our new online electronic system, anybody can see anything in there. So it will actually allow anybody to give us comments on a project that's submitted for an HPA.
Great. More transparency.
We're trying.
Okay. Great job. We'll see you over the next several months.
Thank you very much.